So let's self-identify ourselves. My name's David Prest. I'm a journalist.
My name's Keith Davis. I'm an ex-chief exec of a charity and a trustee of a charity.
And my name's Camilla McGibbon, and I'm a writer of plays, novels, but I'm also a trustee and ex-trustee of a number of charities.
And so together we are thinking about analysing, dissecting and questioning people involved in charities, and the aim of our game is to try and give some focus to where we're going. So we are good charity, bad charity.
We are.
We are.
Blimey, it's been a bit of a month.
It has, isn't it? And, you know, from the last time we sat here, you know, recording some of our views and taking things forward, you know, it seems like someone's opened Pandora's box.
Good charity, bad charity. We seem to be emphasising the last month, the bad charity. Not quite sure how we're going to get to the good charity, but I'm sure we'll get there by the end.
Yeah, but it is about, you know, not exposing too much, isn't it? Here, it's about the learning opportunities as well for us, you know, and for the other people that are out there. Because there's a lot of people out there that I'm sure are sat there now worried about, hey, could that have been me? Could I be in that position now, you know?
Well, I certainly went down my checklist
really?
Of policies. I thought to myself, okay, am I shocked? Am I surprised? I'm surprised and I'm shocked. Do I feel a bit defensive as a charity trustee? The answer is probably yes.
We're talking in the wake of possibly the biggest scandals that hit the charity sector in certainly the last 20, 30 years. A sex scandal involving Oxfam, possibly the most household name of all charities. And it has come down quite heavily. I mean, I think it's worth just quoting some of the vitriol that's been poured out by, let's take one example, Rod Little, I think writing in the Sunday Times, describing the activities of Oxfam staffers in Haiti in 2011. No sooner had they arrived in the earthquake zone than they'd set up their bordello, the pink apartments, and were ready for, as one of them put it, young meat barbecues. The women were purchased, some of them younger than 16 and decked out in Oxfam T-shirts. It goes on, it's lurid, and at the end of it, there's a sense that the charity sector as a whole is tainted by bad governance and a predatory third world elite, not by capitalism. I think the Oxfam staffers know this, says Little. I think they know this and it makes them hot. Never give these people any of your money.
I think this is the knock-on effect, isn't it? The knock-on effect that people's perceptions can be, well, they're all like that, aren't they? You know, why are we giving them our money if that's actually how these predators are taking the opportunity out there that we're giving them to actually try and do good works? And that, I think, is a big issue for them at the moment. You know, how do they reassure their funders, their donators, their sponsors, that actually we're not like that? It is a real negativity at the moment in the industry.
But is this about big? Is it actually about size? Is it about the fact that if a charity goes beyond, as it were, the medium size, it becomes almost an international corporation? And if it is an international corporation, how do you keep your eye? How do you make sure that the values that you espouse, and somebody like Oxfam, I mean, it started in Oxford, FAM is about famine. It started only 75 years ago. So in some ways, it's extraordinary the journey that it has come to. But how do you know, if you're sitting in London or wherever and you're the head of a charity like Oxfam, what your people on the ground are doing? And let's just make one thing clear. Charity as a sector is huge and diverse. Therefore, we shouldn't be surprised. I think where we're all hugely disappointed is the fact that somehow, again, we keep putting our ethics in a basket called charity. And when charity misbehaves, it's somehow seen as worse than other sectors. I think we need to get real on this. I think we need to look at what the mechanisms are. And I think we all, to a certain extent, need to bore ourselves, because the boring bits are the bits that make things effective. The good policies, the good systems, the good working, the good staff relations.
I think good policies are okay. The problem with good policies is they need to be enacted. They need to be enacted on a daily basis. They need to be enacted on how we actually operate within that sector. It was someone said to me, you know, about a fortnight ago, the problem with predators is they will look for the opportunities that give them the access. Policies are great, but you've got to follow them through on a daily basis. You can't just have them and put them in the bottom drawer and say, well, we've got a safeguarding policy. And because some of the issues that came out of the Oxfam and Save the Children were some people were moving from charity to charity, you know, and they weren't getting picked up.
It is there is sort of eerie moments. I've been speaking to one or two people who involved in that sector, one of whom said to me that Oxfam was kind of an open secret, that some of the behaviour of some of their staff was a little bit near the edge. And one would have thought that even a basic code of conduct for people operating in those sort of fields when they're dealing with vulnerable people could have sat on this, surely.
Yeah, and that was really interesting. The ethics of how you employ and how people should behave in those areas should be paramount. You know, we should be, if we are a good charity, you know, we should be making sure that the people out there understand the core values, understand the focus that we should be having on them, and delivering what they should be delivering.
But if we look at that word vulnerability, mm-hmm. when you think about the majority of the charities that immediately come to mind, they are about vulnerability. They're about need. You're either vulnerable because you aren't eating, or you're vulnerable because you've been abused, or whatever their vulnerability is. So in another way, it's extraordinary that we haven't gone down a much stronger line on values and safeguarding and systems, because this is about the most vulnerable.
Just looking again at some of the coverage of the story, this is Andrew Rawnsley, I think it is, in The Times, saying that ultimately development is not just another industry. Even though the pressures to be cost-effective are similar, charities can't have a purely transactional relationship with government along the lines of give us the aid budget and we will make poverty history. Business approach to that sort of size of operation is not necessarily the way forward. And that's quite interesting for our guest that we've got coming in a second. Now, on our wish list of guests, Keith, we had all sorts of people, didn't we? We had Bono.
Yeah, we did.
We had Tom Jones. By the way, Tom, we talked to Tom Jones.
All right.
Tom sends his regards, Keith. He remembers that weekend in Abergavenny in 1973 with you.
Yeah.
And he's we're going to book him, basically.
Right, that is great.
He's on the case. His people are talking to our people.
Yeah.
Keith, we're going to make that happen. Brilliant. I promise you. Well, in the meantime, we have a wonderful guest for our first programme.
We do.
You're going to introduce him.
Yes,
Keith.
I am. We've got a... I call him a colleague, really, in some respects, because I've worked with him for the last probably 5-6 years. And I had my leaving do when I left Borough Market with him. He was great. He also took me into a young offenders unit to see what was going on there. And he's also talked to me about some of the other things he's doing, which I would say are charitable intent. And then he writes a book that says charity sucks, OK? And I think for me it was about, OK, I want to know what the balance is now, Iqbal. You tell me.
OK, Iqbal Wahab, restaurateur, owner of the Cinnamon Club, formerly of the Cinnamon Club, now of Roast in Borough Market, which, by the way, we should say, is a food market in southeast London for those of us who aren't necessarily au fait with all of that.
And can we say the best food market in London, and if not Europe?
You can say what you like, Keith. It's your podcast. Charity Sucks is the name of his book, published 2 years ago, which suddenly seems to be coming into focus in a big way. And this issue of how business interacts with charity is becoming very much the talking point of where we are at the moment. So let's hear what he's got to say. So Iqbal has joined us. Thank you very much for coming, Iqbal. It's fantastic to see you here. Give us a sense, first of all, of your where you came from. What was your sort of starting point in business?
Well, I'm an immigrant from probably the poorest country in the world, Bangladesh. My parents got the only scholarships in that whole region to go to university, and then they came to London. And one day I asked my parents, what would have happened if you were sick or somebody was better than you? And so they took me to Bangladesh for the first time, and they took me to this mud hut that they lived in, and I thought, this is where I would have been if you were ill. Gosh. Because the person who came second, nothing happened to them. And so I've always had this thought about, you know, how lucky I've been to have been part of that very small opportunity to grow and succeed in a country like this. And I saw it again when I was 16. I had a very unruly childhood, ran a little gang in school in Battersea, which It's no longer a rough school. It's actually where Prince George goes to now, at £6,000 a term.
Oh, really?
Is he a member of your gang?
No, not yet. We're working.
You ran a little gang in a private school, is that right?
No, it was a state school.
It was a state school then, okay. Well, that makes it marginally better.
Yeah, and so when we, because we all made a lot of money in this gang, and then we all failed our O-levels as a result, and my parents gave me a nudge and said, give it a go. And so I did, and I retook, and I went on to university and did the stuff that I did. But the rest of the gang never had that nudge from their parents. Two ended up in prison within a year, one committed suicide, one was killed. So I've always been very much aware that my success hasn't been purely as a result of my own skills, but of luck and opportunity as well, which are deprived to many people. So whilst I've gone on and had some modicum of success in business, I've always been wary of who's been left behind. When I came to Borough Market 13 years ago to open Roast, I noticed that this fantastic market had all this wonderful food and wonderful produce. And I remember saying to the trustees at the time that if a chicken costs £15 over here, how does a person in Walworth or Elephant and Castle afford to come and eat here? And the trustees had a very credible response, which is that this is a market celebrating the best of artisanal produce. And I thought, but the people on the other side of the road don't get it, don't become part of it. So I linked up with the Prince's Trust in Southwark, and I started bringing kids from local areas, Walworth, into Roast, and I took them for market tours. And so I thought, let me start mentoring these guys, giving them some like more credible opportunities and world views. And people have innate talents, but a charitable view of them, they aim to lift these guys up, but they very rarely succeed. And we can see that not just in terms of what might be considered a jaundiced view on my part, but by the facts. Social mobility figures show that these initiatives aren't working. We see ever-increasing rates of crime. We see ever-increasing rates of incarceration. So whatever noble attitudes charities start off with, the measurability of their success is not one to be defended.
What do you think needs to be done then? What would have been a better way to take that sort of support forward?
I think two tendencies have emerged in the last decade. One is social enterprise. From the big lottery up to big society capital, governments have realised, it started with David Cameron, that on their own, they're not going to fix things.
Yeah.
And that there is this whole new world where if charity isn't financially accountable for what it achieves, social enterprise or the intention of doing good and making a profit at the same time is probably a better road to go down. And we've seen some phenomenal successes in the social enterprise world, which have outstripped conventional charities, which in turn has made private sector organisations like mine think, well, if they can do that, why aren't we doing it? I'll give you an example of what we did at Roast. For many years, we had a table in the restaurant, which started from day one, where all the profits went to support local projects from the Prince's Trust to pay us funds for London. And our accountants and finance guys, they're pulling their hairs out at this. And they're like, what are you doing making our route to profit even longer by taking this approach? And I had a thought in my head, but I didn't really share it with them because they thought I was crazy enough as it is, that this isn't actually a cost, this is an investment. It's an investment not just in our local community, which is very important, it's one of the things that Roast has become known for, but it's an investment in our own future. And I found it out to be true a few years later when I don't know if you remember, Gordon Ramsay did a TV series where he went into Brixton Prison.
Yep.
And he taught inmates how to cook. And so he invited a few of us to go into Brixton one day, and inmates cooked lunch in front of us. And there was one guy who was cooking right in front of our table. And I said to Gordon, this guy has got a very keen eye. He said, 6 weeks ago, this guy couldn't boil an egg. So I went up to him afterwards and I said, are you going to be released soon? He said, yes, I hope so. And I said, well, I've got a restaurant in Borough Market. Would you be having some work experience there? He said, sure, I'd love to. So I told the governor. And then I forgot about it. And I came into my office one day and there was this guy sitting down about 6 months later and he's filling out a form. And I looked at him and I thought, I recognise you. Where have I seen you before? I said, oh, you're the guy from Brixton. What are you doing here? He said, well, I did the workplace and I applied for a job and you've given it to me. And so I took him into my office and I said, look, it's really important you know that I've got a really bad memory. I had not followed up on this. I did not get involved in you getting the work experience, and let alone getting the job. So it's really important for you to know that you got this on your own merit.
Yeah.
And he was so delighted to hear this. Like, he phoned Gordon's TV company, who then phoned the Evening Standard, who did an article about this guy, Andrew, and the opportunity that he got. And this was a turning point for me, not for that, but what happened next, which is that after the article came out in the Standard, we got a huge number of letters, emails, phone calls, roughly all saying the same kind of thing, which is that I never knew about your restaurant, but now that I know you do that kind of thing, I'll start coming.
Mm-hmm.
So I stopped seeing this as an extracurricular activity where, you know, like Victorian posh ladies and doing their noblesse oblige would go and visit prisons. And I thought, this is not extracurricular, this is core curricular. This is actually good for business.
I'm interested in words. And I wonder what you call yourself now, because in your book you talk about charity, you talk about noblesse oblige, you're talking here about I do good stuff. Are you an influencer? Are you a benefactor? Are you a philanthropist?
The buzzwords now, which I'm hearing more and more every day in business, are purpose, mission, impact. And purpose-driven businesses that have a wider commitment than bottom-line profit, but it's the John Elkington People Profit Planet. That if you can show that you're achieving all three, not only is it good for employee retention, and not only is it good for public relations, but increasingly we see it improves your commercial performance, because customers, especially millennial customers, are looking to consume from companies that share their values. So this is not any longer a philanthropic mission. This is the way business is going to look in the future, and companies that are doing it now are ahead of the league, and everyone else is going to be playing catch up.
Are you saying you think profit out of poverty is good?
Yes. There is a business solution to poverty. There was a book written by an economist called Paul Polak a few years ago, which showed that the best people to trade with are the poorest. If you could take some from the trillion people who live on a dollar a day, mm-hmm. and you can take them to $5 a day, not only are they then increasing their commercial activity, but the person who took them from one to five is the one that they're going to be loyal to with their future spending.
It strikes me there are a couple of different things operating here. One is just the organisational principles and the motivation of business advising, working with charities in their traditional organisations. And the other thing is using the natural sense of, whether it be a country or local people, local communities, using their sense of natural entrepreneurship in a way and encouraging that.
Yes, I think that we want to get away from the form of what you're describing, the so-called painting of the church wall CSR activity, because if you're the marketing director of a big investment bank and there's a CSR activity where you're all going to give a day's attention to, say, a homeless charity, the marketing director is going to come out there and is going to dole out soup to homeless people and go away feeling good. Whereas what that marketing director really should be doing is showing that charity how to build a better website, how to get traction using their real skills rather than... it's quite often that CSR is loaded in the benefit of the giver rather than the recipient.
I think that is so correct.
Absolutely. And I think it reminds me very much of the film When Harry Met Sally.
Yes.
And she is always having whatever it is she wants to eat on the side. And to me, what business does in their giving side is on the side rather than threaded into the DNA of the business. And this is what worries me about the whole idea that business should be taking over the role of the charity. That isn't to say that charity should not be more business-like, and we can certainly have a conversation about that. But somehow charities have their remit as their core, whereas business has its good side on the side, and that's what worries me.
No, and I totally agree.
How unique are you, Iqbal, is what I would ask.
Well, I don't know, but...
Sorry, that was a bit of a tough one, but I think you are.
In a way, that what you described is what happened to me at Roos. I was our unofficial CSR officer until I got to the point where I realised that this isn't CSR, this is... PR, this is HR, this is so many R's.
This is recruitment. You've got three, this is everything.
New 3 R's.
Yeah,
it's
your values.
And the more that we outsource a company's values to one person at the end of the corridor so that everyone else will get on with their day-to-day lives, nothing gets fixed.
No.
It's going to be
integrated. I never believe in silos. I think nothing gets fixed when it's in a silo. Everything works only with interaction, only with a community voice in the broadest sense.
Going back to what comes across at times, and I don't mean to be offensive, obviously, because you're a friend, that you've got this hard-nosed business, profit-driven, business is the most important bit, business is the only thing that can do this. Do you really believe that charity sucks and we should get rid of them all?
No.
It's called a provocative
Thank
title.
God,
right?
No, of course not. So somebody wrote to me the other day saying, I'm reading a book, but I don't think I agree with everything in it. I said, I think neither do I.
I think that was going to be my follow-up question because I know you and I don't believe in luck. I believe what you've done as an individual has created, seen the opportunities and taken them. And that, I think, is the unique and specialness about I See Within You, which I see in so many other people that are not prepared to make that jump, to take that risk. And I see some charities in that way at the moment because they're feeling browbeaten by what's going on in the wider charity world. And I believe, it's my view, that businesses can help that. But they seem reluctant to do that. They seem to gimme, gimme, gimme.
Well, there's two ways of looking at that. If you look at what Philip Green did with BHS, which happened, as luck would have it, on the week I launched Charity Sucks. And so everyone said, well, business sucks. I said, it can do. Of course it can. But I haven't, throughout this whole Oxfam thing, I haven't said a word criticising charities because Philip Green does it there doesn't mean all businesses are bad. Just because that guy from Oxfam, or we find a few other examples, I think it'd be a very low-level action for me to kick a charity when it's down. Because that could happen to any organisation.
And I think that's the point, isn't it? You know, it can happen, and we are seeing it in some big organisations at the moment, this bullying, this abuse, this, you know, horrible behaviour by people. And I know you're not like that, which is why I had to ask that question.
No, but you look at investment banks in the city. This activity Absolutely. Happens all the time.
Yeah, it does. It does. So I think, you know, from my point of view, you know, your experience and how you can support, and I know how you support some people, your mum's cooking group and various things like that, it's about businesses can work better with charities to help them to deliver.
How do you reassure, though, that nervous chief exec of a charity who knows that business could potentially offer something, but maybe has had their fingers burnt in the past with a business arrangement that wasn't quite in the right vision, as it were. How do you reassure them, look, this is what you have to do to try and work with businesses or create the business mindset within your own company?
Well, firstly, charity chief executives have got to stop looking at businesses purely as the person or the organisation that writes a cheque.
Cash cow.
That's what charities always. When I went to a charity once and I said, look, there are 30 things on this table. Why isn't there a branded version of this pen, this pad that you could be selling? That T-shirt you're wearing. Why can't we get a celebrity to design it, sell it? And the dirty looks I got around this table. Shut up and write us a check. Chief executives of charities actually are genuinely open, and most of them aren't. They're reluctantly talking to business leaders. If they were genuinely open and said, like, look, come and sit in my chair for a week and see what it's like. Come and sit for one day. And t- tell me what you think that we can genuinely do, because we're right up against it and our model isn't working anymore, and I need to see what you can give me that I'm not seeing myself.
And maybe there's a book in that, Business Sucks, but how can we get it together?
Yes.
You know, because I think that is something for me that would say, I mean, I coach and mentor chief execs, as you know, from charities, and they are nervous, you know, and yeah, they do. They want the easy out at times. They just, you know, just give me your money and I'll play with it. Yeah. But what you're expressing today, I think, is something that is so powerful for some chief execs of smaller charities, not necessarily the big ones, you know, the smaller charities that are doing good jobs that actually could be doing better. I think I've said before to my colleagues, I know one person who I can guarantee is a chief exec of a charity that saved lives. And he has saved 40 lives by finding marrow bone donors. As soon as he got promoted and got an award from Tony Blair for all his good work, all his funding dried up because people said, well, you're successful now. You know, and that's a problem out there, that, you know, success has to be balanced right the way through with how they can be sustainable in that.
And businesses rely on success in order to be reinvested in.
Yeah.
And that's the crucial element where charities are missing.
Yeah.
Iqbal, you've been the privileged recipient of the first grilling today. fantastic to have you here. And we now have this thing where we ask you to leave the studio and we mull over what you've said and then we contemplate where we're going next, because this is Good Charity, Bad Charity. Thanks very much.
My pleasure.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Iqbal. It was lovely to see you.
Iqbal Wahab has left the room. Some really interesting things to think about there. He's really on the kind of nail with a lot of things, isn't he? And kind of comes from his perspective and as obviously gets extraordinary amounts of, you can see his face light up. We could see his face light up when he talks about some of the people he's helped along the way. When he talks about those stories, he talks about what he's done. Does it in a very natural way, doesn't it? It's like just part of his DNA now. And that's kind of quite reassuring, isn't it, in a way?
I think for me it was very reassuring because, you know, I know the guy reasonably well. And I knew when Charity Sucks, when I read it, it was like, that's not him. But what he did was, for me, gave a very good balance today about where it works both sides. And what he loves to do is see it happen, his outcome bit. See the youngster that he got into the restaurant, you know. And I think that, from the point of view for me, was very encouraging for business. Maybe charities have got to make them see it better. You know, they've got to give them this vision, this longevity view.
I think Iqbal exposes the thing that I love about anybody that's involved in food. It is about generosity and it is about sharing. And it's not about sitting on your own in a room eating a takeaway. It's about, I'm talking to you over something that we both think is highly valuable, and not only highly valuable, but absolutely essential, because if we don't eat, we starve.
And isn't it interesting that it starts with a restaurateur's kind of little trick, isn't it? It starts with one table in his restaurant, which we should say is quite large, but I mean, you know, table in his restaurant of which all the takings and the profits go to charity every day. I mean, that's kind of quite a profound statement, and it's very kind of, you know, okay, he knows the publicity value of that, and when word gets out about that, and undoubtedly the people serving at those tables will say, well, actually, you do realise you're sitting at the charity table or whatever. You know, that's a great little trick, isn't it? And actually, sometimes I think a lot of charities just ignore those sort of, they were branded as a gimmick.
Yeah, but he was brave enough to do it, because he did say that, you know, some of his funders were saying, what the heck are you doing? You're giving away my profits. And for him to stick to that, for me, is his DNA.
That key word, engagement, that's one of the main things that we should embrace. It's not just about going to for a charity organiser, for somebody involved, it's not just about going to ask for money from this business that they see turning over however much profit a year. It's about engagement with them on a small scale to start off with no sense of where it's going necessarily, but just getting an organisation, a business on board.
Yes, and it's about when you engage with people, you don't just tell them what you're doing. You listen to what their needs are, and you manage to mesh those 2, 3, 4, 5 things together into something bigger. That's what interests me, and that's how you keep going.
Yeah, and the interesting for me is that what charity chief execs and their staff need to do is need to know how to negotiate. Mm-hmm. Then go from
with those businesses, okay,
and look at, okay, what else can we negotiate with them, rather than just saying, here's my nice pen, sign that check.
Yeah, but that's the partnership word, Keith. I mean, boy, do we bang on about that kind of thing, whether it's in community engagement or whatever it is. We cannot do this by ourselves. We don't exist in a silo.
But also that idea that, you know, somebody, a business coming to a charity, that business is going to want something back and probably going to want their money back, their investment back at some stage.
And does that matter if the end result is delivering that charity objectives at the end of the day? You know, and one of the things that I think I was hearing from Iqbal this morning was listen to what business need, what they want, and also hear it and then help us deliver it together.
Isn't it fascinating? Oh, well, I think we're going to get this a lot, aren't we, with everybody we have in this room. What is their essential motivation? That motivation which started within running a gang and realising... Christ knows what he was doing in that gang in South London.
I've never asked him. He's probably told me that story, but I've never asked him.
Yeah, in the words of my mother, it's best not to dwell on those sort of things. Yeah. This has been Good Charity, Bad Charity. I'm David Prest.
I'm Keith Davis.
And I'm Camilla McGibbon.
We are produced by the wonderful Dan Hardoon is outside, and we are based here in Whistledown Studios in South London, which is available to hire for anyone in the podcasting world. We are distributed on Android phones via Audio Boom. We're distributed via Audio Boom. We're also on Apple Podcasts. If you like what you've heard, then tell your friends verbally or virtually. Yep. I like that phrase, don't you?
Yeah.
Rate, review, tear and share. That will be really good. We'll be back with another episode pretty soon.
Yep, look forward to it.
Bye.